Hi, thanks, Bill. I'm going to talk a little bit about the what's going on with the soil biology and ecology, but it's premised on some of the previous work that Leroy talked about earlier. So I'm not going to, he's already set the stage for what the solar corridor is. Just recalling that the idea is that there's more carbon dioxide captured and a chance for more photosynthate being fixed. So that suggests that there would be more carbohydrates being moved to the root systems, increased root exudation of the carbon substrates, and thereby perhaps enhance soil microbial activity in the rhizosphere. And then along with that, if we have a corridor crop or a floor crop, however you want to refer to that, there's an opportunity there to further increase this diversity, and you have all these functions: conservation, organic matter enhanced, plant nutrient maintenance, and sustaining that microbial diversity and function, along with some other forage, grain, and even beneficial arthropod habitat, which I talked about on Monday. So for the objectives that we've been looking at for the last 4 or 5 years have centered on looking at some soil quality indicators. We did 1 year, we looked at microbial diversity and function, and then along with that, some of the crop productivity parameters with both the primary crop and the corridor crop. And for the first few years, we would do a comparison with a solid planted field or a monoculture in standard 30-inch rows compared with those planted in the corridor, which were 60-inch. These are some of the parameters that I've already mentioned. These are the primary measurements I'll talk about today. We've had a lot of other measurements, root densities water extractable carbon and all that. I just don't have a lot of time to talk about all that, but I could be happy to discuss about that with you later. And then in 2015, we were only able to do a solar corridor comparison among selected hybrids because we had some fairly difficult weather patterns that you know, we were lucky to even get a crop planted. So the hybrids that we've looked at during the past years, we've included some modern varieties or hybrids that you see here, and then there are some of these other selections, the Augusta and Master's Choice type hybrids that have some of the old genetics that Leroy had been looking at previously that he talked about in his old ABCD hybrids that we can't actually find anymore, as I understand it. But these have been selected based on, for instance, ear flex trait, those kind of traits. In fact, one of the Master's Choice is very prolific in 2 to 3 years per stock. So we'll get right into the data. Some of the soil quality indicators that we looked at, and this really isn't in the active carbon fraction, is really not part of the total soil health indices yet, because it's the primary one is total soil carbon. But we think active carbon is a little better representation of what is going on with the microbiology in the soil, because it represents a recently decomposed fraction of carbon, and it represents more of the activity that the microorganisms are involved with. So we measured that. It's basically the permanganate extraction technique. And so we're looking at rhizosphere samples under these plants in either a corridor or a monoculture context. And as you can see, there are some differences between these hybrids and their effect with the solar corridor and the amount of active carbon that's being produced in the rhizosphere zone, which suggests that perhaps there's more carbon being released into the rhizosphere environment, and it's being broken down quickly by the microorganisms in that soil. And this carried over into 2015. We see some varieties here that have higher active carbon in the rhizosphere, and we're even getting an effect with these corridor crops, which was buckwheat, cowpea, and sun hemp, that can also maybe make an overall contribution to the soil carbon. Now you combine that with some microbial activity, and here I'm just going to show a soil enzyme activity, which represents carbon cycling, which is soil glucosidase. And this has been shown. In fact, it is one of the soil health index parameters that is used now. And it's very sensitive to changes in the soil environment. So again, we have our varieties here, monoculture versus soil corridor. And you see some of the modern varieties don't respond to the solar corridor. Some of the older varieties were getting as much microbial activity, if not more, with the solar corridor than without, indicating that there is increased biological activity. And in 2015, we see that there is, with these varieties, confirms of activity from previous years. And then again, we're getting some activity with that floor crop. All right, so you know, what does this all mean to the microbial diversity in the soil when we impose this system in the field? What we want to do is increase this diversity in the soil, as represented in this hypothetical block of soil, where we have a large variety or diversity of microorganisms and other microfauna, including earthworms and those kinds of organisms. And what that means is you have higher diversity structurally. It presumes that you have higher diversity in the function of the soil, that all the functional capacities in the soil are being carried out as well. So what we did in soils in 2014, we looked at a marker called phospholipid fatty acids, which is basically a biochemical marker, represents the lipids or the fatty acids in cell walls and membranes of microorganisms, and they're all distinctive for each microbial group. And when you analyze this biochemically, you can get a total soil microbial PLFA, which is loosely represents the total soil microbial biomass. So what is the total amount of microbes in the soil? And so, again, when we looked at rhizosphere soils from these varieties, we do get, you know, we get this similar response by some of these varieties with higher microbial biomass in their root zone compared to the monoculture. Interestingly, some of these modern hybrids do not show that. There's more of the biomass with the monoculture system. Now, why that is, I really don't know for sure, but it could be increased root carbon exudation again, increased active carbon is driving this diversity change as well. And you can look at different components of the PLFA analysis. Here's total bacteria, and we get a good response everywhere. And I think that's because in the rhizosphere, we're getting this readily available carbon that's stimulating these microorganisms, and the bacteria are the ones that are going to be the first ones there because of the easily metabolized sugars and simple carbohydrates are going to be metabolized first. So we get a large component of that. But then when we look at fungi, it's a little different story. More of those are showing up in the solar corridor or the system, but there are some. This particular mycogen hybrid here is very high in fungi in the monoculture. And part of that may be due to just hybrid traits. The amount of carbon that's being released differs, but we are getting that response to the fungi. And the fungi are more involved in more complex materials as well, so that we haven't really broken that down yet, but it's interesting that we see this response. And the same with gram-negative bacteria, which are very important in a lot of the nutrient cycling, primarily nitrogen cycling and carbon cycling. They're showing up a little bit higher, that component with the solar corridor. There are more complex and a variety of compounds being released under that system. And then finally, the mycorrhizae that you may be familiar with that are symbiotic fungi that are involved in phosphorus acquisition, water uptake, seem to be enhanced also in some solar corridor variety treatments. But it's interesting, again, that this mycogen hybrid is standing out like that, and I'm not sure why that is. It may be a type of mycorrhizae that is being associated with it. We haven't really gotten it down to specific species yet. So there does seem to be an effect on the microbial diversity based on what's going on in the corridor, and you can loosely relate active carbon to some of these groups. For instance, here is active carbon and total bacteria. We get higher, you know, these relationships are fairly, you know, it's moderate, it's about 60% R, but there is some relationship that might suggest that you know, the amount of carbon being released is perhaps influencing the overall microbial community. All right, some of the crop productivity parameters we looked at, we did some simple measurements for chlorophyll or rough photosynthetic activity using the chlorophyll meeting and getting these SPAD readings. And again, all these varieties seem to show that there is more activity in the corridor, as shown by the red bars. From that standpoint, it seems like that perhaps there's a difference in efficiency of that particular photosynthesis that is making up some of the differences in what's going on in the rhizosphere and in yields that I'll show you in just a bit. And again, in 2015, we didn't have the comparisons with the monoculture, but for these varieties, it does kind of confirm what we saw in years previous. So grain yields in 2014 was fairly a good yield for that particular soil where we're at in mid-Missouri with the clay pan soils. We're very fortunate to get yields this high. And 2014 was a good year. And so here you see we are getting, if we're not getting a response to the corridor, we're getting yields as well as what we get in the monoculture. And these are with these hybrids that Leroy had selected, and we get some response with a modern variety, this mycogen variety here. So we are seeing somewhat of a response in terms of yield. So that was 2014 data. 2015, this is the kind of year that we had. Very wet spring. So you see that we didn't, and this. So this is normal or average annual rainfall. Very high precipitation in the spring. We're not able to get a crop established until June 29th. So keep that date in mind. That's important. And then we went in and put in cover crop or corridor crops. It didn't put that in until July 24th. I show you this picture here because what do you notice about that corn at that time? Well, you got an onset of rust as well, probably southern rust. That didn't help yields either. But the corridor crop is doing very well. That again, is cowpea. So, you know, I caution that these are very provisional results on the yields. The yields were lower this year, and we had only this one variety that reached close to 100 bushel to the acre. But we do get, you know, we kind of confirmed that the performance was adequate as far as what we had seen in the past, and it compares very well to this one mycogen variety that did well. And this is just the solar corridor. We did not have a monoculture comparison. But there were a lot of factors, which I've already mentioned, the rainfall. But this late planting date probably had as big a factor as any because we were already past the effective amount of sunlight that we were going to capture that year. We were past the summer solstice. So we think that, you know, these higher traits might be related to that year, higher yields may be related to that year flex trait. And, you know, I should probably adjust those plant populations. It was 30,000 based on a 30-inch row, but, you know, when you use the corridor, that should probably be in half. And that rate was also, when we did stand counts, it was down to 28,000. Okay, so what about the corridor crops? We looked at several corridor crops over the past year, and I've taken the approach a little bit differently. I like to see what can we grow during the summer, although we did do one with oats late fall because it's a nice crop to have if you want to try to suppress weeds. It'll frost kill and you have a nice mulch the next spring, and it does very well in the corridor in late fall. Here is cowpea planted after corn planting that you see here that we've already looked at. We looked at things like sun hemp, an Asian introduction, That probably won't work because it is a tall stature, but we just wanted to see how it would do, if it would establish, and it did very well. It bloomed in 60 days. But, you know, it is a very good nitrogen fixture. I'm not sure if you can see this, but these roots are heavily nodulated. So that is one advantage that we want to look at, maybe reduce inputs of chemical nitrogen that way. This is buckwheat. And the thing about buckwheat, very fast, it was blooming within 30 days. And, you know, you talk about if you want to enhance the beneficial insects and pollinators, that crop really brought them on, and they were loaded with insects. But the other thing about it is that once it turned dry, it did not survive at all. It survived, but it didn't do very well. It didn't make any much more biomass than what you see there, in comparison to cowpea, which is a very drought-tolerant plant. So, you know, the other advantage to not only the top growth, and we want to look at the root biomass, and this is not the best plant to show, but it's the only picture I had at the time, but you look at the oats, very dense root systems in the soil that's helping to promote that overall microbial diversity because of the root sloughing and the carbon that's being introduced into the soil. You know, certainly in some situations where we have a cover of weeds, you know, that's great. At least you have something on the ground. But you look at these wimpy root biomass systems, it's not going to give you the benefit as you would have for a vigorously growing plant. All right, so some of the stats I've accumulated on these floor crops or corridor crops over the years is that, and this is all dry weight basis, you know, we've had some spring oats and which produces pretty well biomass. And then cowpea in 2014, very, very prolific in just the solar corridor, quite a bit of biomass. 2015 then, we switched to a different variety. Lower overall biomass, but if you look here, we have a bonus, which is the production of the actual food crop, or the peas. This is dry weight of peas, about a kilogram per hectare of black-eyed peas. And so you look at that, it may be up to about 3 to 4% nitrogen, which is approximately 25% protein. So that's an additional, it could be feed grain or food grain that could be used in that crop. And we picked it as fresh weight as well. I've lived in Mississippi for 5 years, so I have an attraction to cornbread and black-eyed peas, so this is a very interesting project. Now, the one last item I'd like to point out is because of the difference here in this biomass of the cowpea between the 2 years. In the first year, we used a cultivar that was for cover cropping, so it produced a lot of biomass. But as I'll show you in the next picture, there's a problem with that, and the reason we switched to a standard food type legume, California black-eyed, this year. And that is this, what you see here. With the Red Ripper cover crop variety of cowpea, it begins climbing up the corn stalks, and this is just one row down that corridor. So it made it very difficult to harvest. The other thing is it's a very long season pea, and we never got any grain. We had pods. If you like pods, you could pick those, but they never filled out. With this California black eye, it's more of a semi-vine or bushy variety. It stayed within the corridor. It produced peas. We were able to harvest, and it had a lot of different benefits. So it just depends on what you want. With the cover crop type pea, after harvest, you have this nice biomass out here in the corridor covering the soil. And if you notice, we've also found that there's a little bit of allelopathic activity. It will suppress these winter weeds. And on the other hand, if you look at the food grain or feed grain source, a little narrow stature, it's full of the pea pods here, but it doesn't produce quite as much biomass. So you know, there's a couple of little things that you find out as you go along with this system. Another concern or perhaps a criticism is how you harvest this system, as Harold pointed out. Here is the corn has already been harvested, and this is not a very good picture, but in this corridor is the row of cowpeas, and the pods are still intact. So you have an opportunity to harvest the corn, and if you want to go back and harvest the peas, you can do that. So it's that worked out well for with that. All right, so this is what we've gotten so far, accumulated so far. It seems that we do have soil quality indicators that are enhanced with this system, and it is dependent on the corn hybrid that is selected. The soil microbial structure, and this is preliminary. That's only 1 year of data on that PLFA work, but it does seem to respond to this system. The crop productivity, including the photosynthesis and grain yields, shows some increased response to the system depending on the hybrid. We have limited trials on corridor crops that contributes additional biomass, and there are opportunities for potential additional grain per aerial unit and improved soil quality attributes. And the selection of the corridor type and variety is critical for the best performance in the type of situation that you're setting up. With that, I'll turn it over to Bill.
And we'll give a round of applause.